Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in New Basement Studios by the lake, we have not been together for over a month because we've had all those like special shows.
It's true.
We had the Best Of special, which I do want to get to briefly. And then we had the bike show, which we hope you all listened to, where my partner and I were out and about. And we do have some follow up on that story. And I know you have some opinions that you want to throw at me. But I just want to give a shout out to any of you that there are a number of you. We can tell because we can track our listeners.
Yeah, I haven't checked in a long time, but
yeah. So I don't want to sound too big brotherish if you're out there now listening, but we don't
by track, by the way, it doesn't mean you can tell the people. You can tell how many people downloaded in general
regions, and when they listen. Yeah, and basically what state you live in.
Yeah.
So all you guys there in Colorado, we're keeping an eye on you. anyway, we do have a number of people that listen, that physically download and listen to the show when it drops. It drops late on a Tuesday night most weeks. And I want to apologize because in the Best Of special, if you listen through to the end, for some reason, on the early editions of the show, the joke at the end of the show, I cue up just to finish, one last comment, and then it just goes blank.
Just crickets.
Yeah, there was absolutely nothing. And I found that in doing the show, something had happened in transfer where it had removed the very last joke on the Best Of special, which tied together the rest of the show.
Removed?
Yeah, I don't know. It just disappeared. Mm-hmm. So it just ended with this vague, blank space.
I download it usually when it first comes out.
So you will know what I'm saying when you eventually listen to it.
I haven't actually. Yeah. Well, okay. I listened to the beginning and then I was like, I heard this. It seemed to be heavy on the proctology.
Yeah, there was that one section. Yeah. So anyway, I then corrected the show. I went back in and found what had occurred and I put a new version up. So if you listen to the Best Of show a few days after it's released, you actually got the joke, but I want to apologize to those of you who listened right away.
Was the last joke good enough that people should go back and do it again?
Yes, because it's a haiku, because I put haikus through the show as sort of this year's theme, and the one at the end is a particularly funny haiku that I'd written about you, my partner.
Do you have the bit at the end with all the clips together of like singing and noise?
Oh, that's in there, yeah. Like that. Yeah, it was a good one this year.
That's one of the selling points of listening all the way through, and
it was a good 10 minutes this year, and it was good, and we both had very good lines. And it is interesting, over the years there's been some years there's more voices in singing. This year was a lot of snappy one-liners. So anyway, that's just a quick apology to our fans about the Best Of show. We also wanted to follow up those of you who listened to our review of the Washington DC area rental bikes. I guess it's good we did it when we did it.
Well, we kept talking all along about how we really need to go do this because the test, you know, what's going to happen to it. We didn't know how the market was going to develop. DC was going through a big test phase where they had different folks. By the time we went, two of the bike companies had disappeared.
Right.
We mentioned we passed by one of the bikes that was missing a seat, just lying there on the side of a Mobike and Ofo. Are both Chinese backed companies and both had pulled out. But then, remember, we had a lot of trouble finding spin and line bikes.
Right.
Well, it turns out now I know why, is because they were in this test pilot program in DC. They were allowed to bring 400 vehicles in. So that also included scooters, which we made mention of. And what had happened over the time is they realized everybody was doing better with the scooters. And so they had rebalanced their fleets to be heavy on the scooters. My partner here is like busy, like scrutinizing
his phone. Well, no, because you did mention Ofo, but obviously, after we did that show, I actually went on vacation to London for about 10 days.
Right.
And I actually found a couple of Ofo bikes just lying around.
Yeah, well, so this is...
And I actually cheated and used that picture on our blog post, but in fact, that is not a photograph. The picture that's on the blog post of the rental bike lying on its ground on the ground is not one of the ones we rode. It's actually cheated. It was one that I found just lying in the corner in London.
Yeah.
So clearly, you know, Ofo, the Chinese company, they're in test phases.
Well, we'll talk about more about what was going on in England in a second, but the... So those two bikes now, Spin specifically said, we're not doing bikes at all anymore.
Right.
I think Lime basically said the same thing, or if they didn't say that, they effectively have. And that explains why we were like having such a hard time. They're going heavy into the scooters.
Yeah.
So.
That Lime bike was junk, though.
Yeah, if well, because I guess they stopped paying any attention to it. Meanwhile, Capital Bike Share, the main one,
right,
is now rolling out some electric bikes. So they So we used the jump electric bikes and had good things to say about them.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoiler it, and then because if we give away too much now, people won't go and listen to the bike show. So if you haven't listened to the bike review show, please go and look at it. But yes, spoiler, we both quite enjoyed riding the electric bike or electric power assisted bike, I think is what its technical term is. And as you said, Capital Bike Share, who have been the big boy on the block in Washington, D.C., they are now expanding. They're not replacing their regular bikes. They are adding electric
bikes. Yeah, well, but it's very minor at the moment. It's only a test for them, too, through November. But they're they have a fleet of 4,000 bikes or whatever, but they're adding 80 electric bikes. The one thing is that they're going to fit into the same docks and everything else, so they'll just be mixed in. Yeah. So if you're in DC, they're going to be painted black instead of red, and you'll be able to tell the difference, but they're more or less going to be the same otherwise. So people moving, oddly enough, the price seems to be the same. I assume that's just because they're doing it as a test, and having differential pricing didn't make a lot of sense at this stage of the game. Let's talk about bikes. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but it was an article you had sent me from what English paper? I'm trying to find
from the Guardian.
It was from the Guardian, talking about how, speaking of bikes failing, particularly in Manchester, although they said there was a bit of this in certain neighborhoods in London as well, bikes being horribly abused. I think it was Mobike was up in Manchester, and they said they were losing 10% of their fleet a month to vandalism and theft. And a bunch of them were ending up in the bottom of a canal.
People were just lashing them into the river.
Just throwing them around and just beating them, treating them very badly. The question I have for you as a dual citizen.
Thank you.
Why? Why so much trouble on the bikes in England, whereas they didn't have as much trouble here?
I'll be honest with you. I think because you can. And I know that sounds like I'm being slightly facetious and throwaway, but I'm not. I think this is the issue with the rental bike in general, in that at a certain
bike share,
it's not yours. And I think all of us as humans tend to be slightly more disposive of equipment that's not ours. If you drive a rental car and you ding the door, you're not too upset about it. But if you're driving your new car and you ding the door, you're like, oh, my God.
Not really answering my question, though. Why are the English worse at this than we are?
If I'm walking by and I see a bike and I'm walking by the canal and I'm thinking, yeah, let me just lash that in the canal, well, it's because I can. And I feel it's a good bit of vandalism.
I have yet to hear what's different about English and American.
I don't know. The satisfaction from vandalizing stuff. I don't know what the difference is. But I'm explaining on a human level that I know me. I might have that moment where I just go, this is just lying here. Let me throw this into the river for a big splash. Ooh, didn't that feel good?
You could do that in D.C. We got all kinds of bodies of water to drop them into. But
we're a very white collar middle class town here in Washington D.C.
Well, okay, so now this you're saying Manchester is a rougher town, and so they don't have this. Now, one of the things they mentioned in London too.
I actually think in Manchester it's just Jose Mourinho wandering the streets, being angry, and throwing bikes into the river.
Jose Mourinho.
It's a Premier League joke. Yes.
The quote from one of the companies that did this is, but in London too, we've discovered there's some areas where we've realized are no-go areas for social reasons. I mean, a lot of this sounds like it's a little bit of veiled maybe racism, ethnocentrism, things like that,
basically saying
we're not going to send these bikes into the bad neighborhoods. And there's a big deal in D.C.
Yeah.
about how making sure they serve all of the neighborhoods and they take pains to do this. I also wondered if there was, I was trying to think of England's perspective on, for lack of better words, socialist type things. It's not that this is socialism, but it's shared resources kind of thing.
Right.
Might be a little different than Americans' version of that. Like, we don't perceive this as like a welfare type of item that you'd abuse, whereas maybe it is there.
I think there might be a bit of an undercurrent of that, but I will only say undercurrent in general, because I think one of the big differences between a lot of Europe, Northern Europe, all of Europe, and the US, I'm now going to make a stereotypical comment about the U.S. I don't think public transportation in general, definitely here in America, has a slight tinge of, I can't think of the right word, but if you tell someone that they ride the bus, that's a slight insult. Oh, you're riding a bus. Do you know what I mean?
Well, buses can serve, this is why they keep wanting to put train lines in everywhere, because basically everybody's who trolleys and things. Because
but in Europe, you're like, riding a bus. So what I'm saying is, I think it's not quite as clean.
But see, that would almost suggest the opposite. Should be
true. I know. That's like, what I'm saying. It's a bit of an enigma.
And Northern European, like where they've had these bike shares in Amsterdam and everything else, I don't think they've had the same trouble. I mean, I think it's just like these roughnecks in Manchester or something.
Yeah. And I'm like, if you can, that's part. But this, again, I think this is in general part of the issue. I mean, you know, when you and I had found on the last show some of the defunct companies, you know, people had clearly cut into the tires. Someone had removed the seat.
Yeah.
So I think in general, that I think that was one of our statements a little bit about the true dockless system, is that A, you couldn't find the bikes, and then when you found them, well, someone's, I don't know, if something's in a dock, I can still vandalize it, but if something's just propped up against the side, Bob's your uncle. Into the canal it goes.
Maybe it's just publicity. Like, maybe it isn't really that much of a difference overall, but it's just the way it's regarded. You know, they would have made it a bigger deal in England. Here, we're like, yes, so they got thrown out, you know? Anyway, I think it's also interesting that the two Chinese companies seem to be the ones that are withdrawing from places or being more upset, because you'd think of, you know, they're, like all the Chinese businesses, they're backed by a lot of money or governmental money or things like that. I think Alibaba, which is like the Amazon of China.
That's right.
Is a big backer of one of those companies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And you would think they would just have an endless supply of money to throw into the thing, whereas it's actually the Silicon Valley-based companies that seem to be sticking it out the longest, making their transitions to scooters and that kind of thing, which...
Well, and you did say that a couple of the companies whose bikes, that one we rode and a couple that we couldn't find, are now out of the bike business and they're into the scooter business. And I obviously think that will be a review show for the future. Although I did add, if you haven't listened to the bike show, or if you have, I actually opened the bike show with me admitting that I've never ridden a scooter.
Yeah, maybe it's the best that you don't start, because one of the things they've been talking about. So first of all, I reviewing the scooters... It's probably, that's not like a whole show. Like bikes, there's enough different, I think scooters are just scooters.
Yeah.
You know, there's not like there's going to be like, oh, this is a better scooter than the
Rolls Royce of scooters.
You know, and apparently they do work similar to the bikes in that it isn't like you stand on it, you turn the thing and go. You do have to step. Like it's all designed to be assisted rather than start from a flat stop.
I don't know. I see people zipping around at speed, though.
Well, they do go pretty quick. I mean, that's what sort of, and one of the things that people are talking about, there's a decent amount of people who are hacked off at all the scooters, and there's more coming where they're trying to push back on they're on the curbs, they're on the sidewalks, should they be in the bike lanes, do they belong in bike lanes, because they're scooters, they're not bikes, you know?
They're even easier to just lash up against the side, aren't they? At least with a bike, you sort of have this notion that you're propping it up against the lamppost, or you're throwing it in the canal. The scooter, you can throw it anywhere.
I saw a guy going down the street the other day where his scooter was clearly running out of battery.
Oh, really?
And so he kept like pushing, waiting for it to go, and then he's pushing, waiting for it to go, and eventually like runs over the curb and throws it over there. So the other thing about it is safety, right? That, I mean, the bikes you can fall off, you can crash on and that, but there's big talk about the scooters being more dangerous. Maybe like people like you who don't understand the basic concept of standing on a board that moves forward.
I've skateboarded, but I have never in my life been on a scooter with any kind of success. I do remember trying it when I was 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it just—I don't know. I didn't take to it.
Have a learning curve.
I don't know.
In any event, so
imagine those old newsreel clips of ducks riding around on skateboards.
There was an article in the Post about a week or so ago, maybe a little longer, talking about they had the cities that have the scooters of a increase, or they were talking about spikes, although I'm not sure how much that is.
I think there
in
is
emergency
a spike.
Room oh, sorry. Visits. You know, talking about how many more people were showing up in emergency rooms. Big thing about, like, whether you're supposed to wear a helmet on the scooter. I don't see anybody wearing helmets.
I did see one dude wearing a helmet, and I remember he whizzed by. I was in a car, and I was at the time I was listening. I want to give a shout out to one of our fans, Mary. Every time I talk to Mary, she's like, what's the deal with these scooters? And she kind of talks a little bit like that, to be fair. What's the deal with these scooters?
Is this a shout out while you're patronizing her voice?
A little bit, yeah. Did you have to wear a helmet? I did see a dude on a helmet. It was just the other week, and I was sitting in my car, and he went whizzing by, and he was sort of jumping from the road and up onto the sidewalk, because
like
you said
scooter expert.
He you was know, moving.
It might have been his own scooter. So there's a guy in my office who's got his own electric scooter, rides back and forth to work, and so maybe those are faster than the ones you get a rental. And that's probably the person who's most likely to wear a helmet, because they have their own scooter. They're not just walking around with a helmet in their hand like I was, you know, from down the sidewalk looking
for
a scooter.
I don't want to get sidetracked on this whole notion. I wear a helmet on my bike most of the time.
Didn't do it when we did our thingy.
Yeah, I understand that. But if you're on a scooter, would you not be better off wearing knee pads and elbow pads?
I don't think you can be killed from banging your knees.
For you?
That's not a conundrum at all. The point of the helmet isn't like, it's to prevent your brain from being broken.
Yeah, I don't know. But if people, but that's what I'm saying now. If people were fully aware that this could occur when they're on a scooter, they might not be so quick to be in a on a scooter.
And so we're being somewhat lighthearted here, but there was actually a death just this week in D.C. of somebody who was on a scooter and who had crashed in some fashion. But it's very mysterious, because this article was just, I think, 4 days ago. 24-year-old has died after being involved in an accident involving a scooter. And he got in some sort of accident, called up a friend, said, oh, the bike is broken. Can you call me a Lyft on your phone? Because I need to get the rest of the way home. I banged up my knee. Guy asks him, are you fine? You haven't injured yourself any worse? No, I'm fine. And then I forget how much later, maybe half an hour later, they find him dead on the sidewalk 500 feet away from where the broken scooter was.
Yeah, plus he said he'd hurt his knee, which wouldn't happen if he did it again. That's why I said, are you wearing knee pads?
The headline reads, oh, scooter death. But it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, certainly you'd think it's certainly possible when people fall and they hit their head that they don't realize what's going on, and then it turns out they have something going on there. But as this guy's friend said, he said, you know, if he had hit his head or scuffed his head or something, he wouldn't have told me, it's my knee, I hurt my knee or my foot or whatever it was. I think it was his foot, actually.
The autopsy will be very revealing.
So, like, checking out, like, so it's certainly possible this guy got, you know, mugged immediately after, or something happened, or something unrelated happened. And so we don't know. So we don't want to say that. They did say that if it turned out to be a scooter related death, they think it would be the first one in America. Like, you know, it hasn't happened anywhere yet, but obviously.
But I think it's too early. I mean, again, if you have an anti-scooter agenda, you're going to be jumping on this, but I think it's fair, there's been not enough deaths for a large enough sample size to really figure out.
Yeah.
And I'm not being flip when I say this. People have been riding bikes for decades and been keeping statistics.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So it is quite, you can sort of have some accurate stats.
Yeah.
Again, you know, this is the first death in this area. And even then, sort of just the details of the accident and everything are not quite clear. So it's a bit quick. Although, at the end of the day, I don't know. Watching people zip around in scooters, there is something, because of the true portability of it, I do suspect we're going to have a few more accidents, not necessarily of people on the scooter, but of pedestrians stepping out the wrong way. I mean, again, when I cross the street and I see a bike coming, obviously, I'm a cyclist, so I'm slightly more, my radar is up in general, whether I'm in the bike or in a car or walking. But I think when you see a bike riding at you and you're in the crosswalk, well, yeah, you're going to maybe give it right away or speed up to get out of the way. I do think at a certain level with scooter, because it's far more insignificant in terms of the piece of equipment, it's a lot harder. I think we're getting used to it.
To your credit for like not knowing how to
scooter. Even that Segway thing that used to be all rich, those are quite big.
Yeah.
So at some moment, you're like, oh, here's a tourist on a Segway.
Being on them, you know, on your bike, we've all done enough biking that you have a sense of, oh, I need this amount of space to stop between here and there. There's a scooter, you know, you don't really know what it is. The little tiny wheels make it all very different.
In fact, I might freeze and go, here's a dude on a scooter coming at me.
I forgot to give you a hard time, as long as we're giving you a hard time for recording stuff.
Sure, hit me.
So when we had plan for this bike outing,
that is correct,
we got these little microphones and we talked a little bit about them on the air there,
that is correct,
and I had said to you, hey, you know, the trick is, while we normally have two microphones at this table, it's concurrently being driven into the computer, everything's all mixed together. If we do these recordings on our phones, you're going to have to blend them together.
Sure.
And you said, no problem, I got that totally taken care of,
which I did.
It turns out you kind of didn't do a normal mix of what I was expecting. So what you did is you just took clips from one or the other microphone rather than actually putting things in so that we would be having a discussion back and forth.
I think part of this, and I'm now going to blame you. CCC, again, you've gone from blaming me, but I'm going to turn it back on you. Because we didn't really pre-plan how we were going to do our own commentary into the bike.
Yeah.
I mean, again, for example, on the Capital Bike Share, which I think was the first one, you were very good. But I listened to my Capital Bike Share stuff, and I was warbling on about Lance Armstrong and all sorts of things.
I told you that when you caught up to me. Yeah. I heard you starting to talk about, like, oh, because I'm a proper cyclist, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, have you been going on a diatribe about cycling?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's not any technological thing. It's the quality of the presenter.
So you're saying I'm better?
You were better on that one.
Oh.
But again, my coverage of the electric-assisted bike was good. I mean, again.
But I mean, there were certainly times like when we were undocking them.
I've not read any listener complaints, so they're not hung up about it.
That's because they don't realize it. Right. But like, you know, made a big deal about how you were going to put it all together. And I'm just saying, it wasn't exactly the high-tech version where you blended. Because remember,
I was talking about how
we were going to coordinate. Like, do we need to do like a little click down? I don't know how people really do this stuff, but obviously when you have...
staff of hundreds? That's normally how this stuff is done. I mean, this operation is
you were still on summer break. I mean, you had the time.
I actually did it on the airplane flying to and from England.
Yeah,
that's why I got so burnt. I was just tired of hearing you drone on about the one bike and me drone on. I mean, it still came together well. I'm going to give myself a shout out even if you won't.
Okay.
All right, let's move. Are we ready to move on?
Yes.
So this is our automated show.
Yeah, speaking of technology type things.
Right. There have been a couple of stories in the news this week about different sort of automated things that we have discussed before. So yep. I think we're going to start with, there's a company called Boston Dynamics, and we have been talking about these guys on and off for about 5 or 6 years now. And we first reviewed them when in 2013 they actually constructed a robot dog.
Yeah.
Quite a big thing, about the same size I would say as, say, a Doberman Pinscher.
It wasn't designed to be
yeah, it doesn't look like
a fun thing or have around the house. It's a dog in the sense of it's like
it is a, ro- a it is a robot. Dog, it is very clearly an electronic metal carbon fiber and wires piece of equipment that moves in the same
like
fashion.
What it's doing
as a dog.
Is it's adopting. You know, this is a theory. Well, not in manner, but like the technique. So that basically, this goes for all kinds of mechanical things where, if it doesn't have wheels, the smartest way to design something is the way nature has designed us, you know, or animals. You know, there's a reason that goats are good at climbing mountains. You know, they have a particular configuration of things. And so, you know, when you're building a robot, what you do is you say, oh, well, that works pretty well. So I'm going to make the knees bend this way, and the shoulders bend this way. And now I can just sort of use the education that we have from animals to build a robot. So it's a dog. I mean, it had sort of a head, but it was not like furry or
no,
it didn't have. I don't.
But I think to be fair, and again, if you go back to our archives for 2013, I might actually put this in the blog. You can look for a show called Robot Dog, and we actually embedded the video, and it does move. It doesn't look like a dog,
right?
But it moves like a dog.
And the big result is it elicits, and we're going to talk more about this in a couple minutes. But it elicits a reaction, like we are just programmed to react to things that look like animals as if they are animals. So,
very true.
So there's. We originally talked about there was a lot of videos. Like Boston Dynamics would say, oh, we're doing this thing, we're going to release a video. And so there's a video of the big version of the dog, which was called Spot.
That's right.
Where somebody would kick it, like on the side, and it would kind of stumble and right itself, and you felt bad for this robot.
Yeah.
Even though it also was terrifying. Like if that robot was chasing you down a street,
you'd
be totally frightened.
That thing was huge. Yeah, know? Exactly.
So they originally had intended it, and I think they probably still have this idea of having a lot of military or other types of use. In fact, I think at one point this company was owned by Google, but then Google spun them off or sold them off or something like that. And so they planned on moving this thing that it was, you know, it could carry loads, it could do kinds of equipment. They then made a smaller one called a Spot Mini, same basic design, just smaller version. Now I think they've either abandoned or they've been abandoned as a defense contract. I saw something, I don't know if it was in this article or another one, where the military told it was too loud.
Yeah.
That it was making noise. And so, like, you know, if you were a Marine trying to hike through a desert, it's great that something could carry your load, but if it's busy going jip, 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 jip,
clack, clack,
jip,
yes,
doesn't
exactly.
help you out very much. So now that their new move, they plan to start selling this to the public in 2019, and this is the Spot Mini. Spot Mini is about, I think it says, 2 feet 9 inches tall, 60 some odd pounds. So it's a decent size item, you know, with a decent amount of weight. And they're talking about using it in security, delivery, construction, right. home assistance, maybe police, you know, things, you know, going in. I don't know if it could defuse a bomb, but meaning like check out things, scope things out. You know, nowadays they have the things with the little tractor wheels, but now if they had something with feet and go up and down staircases, we've seen videos of it opening a door. Like it had like a little claw thing that could open the door and get through the door. So these would all be useful tools.
The police dog union are in two places on this. One more than one more of their members would last the day, but two, some of the members are unhappy that they're going to be replaced by a robot dog. So there are a lot of German shepherds very unhappy.
And yeah, I guess if you're trained for this, is what you expect.
I'm trained for this. It's taken my job, but then you know, if my canine buddy Rex got his leg blown off by a bomb, then. You know, you're sitting around going, I wish they'd had the robot dog and Rex didn't have to go. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of, it's a two-edged sword.
So the one of the announced, I don't know what the guy's name is, but the robot's going to be available next year, meaning 2019. We've built 10 so far by hand. We're building 100 with manufacturers by the end of 2018. And by the middle of 2019, we're expected to be going about 1,000 a year.
What's going to be the cost?
Well, I don't think they've said, but it's going to be a lot.
Going to be steep.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the amount of effort they put into this stuff and what we've seen of it. This is about the most sophisticated. We're going to talk about some other things that are much, much, much less sophisticated, and they cost, well, at least one of them costs like $3,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that this thing...
So frankly, if I'm in construction, I'm still better off finding some day laborers who may or may not be illegal immigrants and putting them to work than investing in a whole load of robot dogs that actually could cost me a lot of money.
Exactly. I have, well, you know...
Or vice versa, benefits, if I'm concerned and about ICE coming to get me...
You know, the price of an exploded one is only the price of the thing, not the price of their family suing you and doing what else. But I'm going to guess it. You know, it's probably like a $50,000, $100,000 thing to start kind of to do all these great things. But it's an interesting. I mean, again, we're on the beginning phase of things that you can expect to see. And so they mention like home care, like taking care of the elderly or something like that. And I was thinking to myself, well, I mean, it can move things from room to room, but really the next wave will be the thing that can also climb the walls and get into your cabinet and get a cup out or, you know, like lift things off of the shelves. And that's going to be a lot creepier, right? Like this one, if it just walks around and stuff, that's one thing. But another thing to basically, to really have it do all the things you want it to do, it's going to be really my scarier part. Like when we saw that, we did that robot dog thing originally, there was like a robot spider
that could
climb walls.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Much creepier looking.
Oh yeah. I was ready to bring my shotgun out and give it both barrels, frankly, because I'm not into that.
Yeah.
So are we ready? Therefore, that's actually quite a good moment. Do we want to segue away from Boston Dynamics into some of these other robots?
So we're kind of going down like they're down in terms of cost and then time in terms of what it covers. So the next article,
and we're now going to move into smaller robotic home assistants / companions. Yep. But at that moment, I think maybe I should say this up front before we physically talk about some of these things, and we are going to embed some clips onto the blog if you want to go there and actually go deeper into these couple of companies. We've just talked about how a certain base level, you know, the Boston Dynamics thing is as amazing as that dog is in terms of it moves, because of its very steel and manufactured construction, can be quite an intimidating object.
Right.
Whereas the one thing I think a lot of the robot companions we're going to talk about now, one of the things that in doing our research we discovered, a lot of effort has been put into the notion of its friendliness.
Oh, yeah.
And isn't it cute and doesn't it react in a certain way? So I just want to preface, before we talk about these companies, I just want to sort of preface that idea and throw it in there for our listeners.
Because we're going to talk about downsides to that as well as upsides.
So do you want to start with Sony?
Yeah.
So we've gone all the way in.
Sony, they came out with a robot dog thing called an Aibo way back in 1999.
And if you remember, I think it was a white dog at the time when it first came out.
Well,
by Sony.
It was
white with black ears, like sort of Snoopy looking thing.
It almost looked like nowadays,
big blue eyes,
like a smartphone head. At that time, we didn't have the smartphones, but it was like a largish screen on the top, so it was kind of sloped down like a nose of a dog, but it didn't really look like a dog face.
Okay.
You know, it just had that kind of And I think it was the screen could display eyes and do things like that. But so that they came out a number of years ago. I don't remember what it did. I mean, it wasn't doing a lot. I think it was just sort of automatic just reaction.
There, wasn't it? Yeah.
So they have now reintroduced it as of the tail end of last year, maybe beginning of this year. I think they've been selling them in Japan. The article I'd read had said it wasn't in the United States, yes, but then something else said it was on its way here, but yes, they're not really
there's a price
aiming for much here.
It says the company first released the new Aibo, which is now the name of their new dog,
right,
with a major ceremony where it presented the dogs to the owners selected by lottery. It has sold 20,000 units in Japan.
Okay.
It expects to sell fewer than that in the United States, said Mike Fasulo, Sony president and chief operating officer. So again, they've moved 20,000 of these things, and when I say moved, they've built and they've sold at least 20,000.
I think they had done it by lottery when they were there because they had enough demand.
They showed it. We watched the video of it. And again, now I now apologize to the listener because I was getting confused with what I've just seen with what my memory thought I'd seen 20 years ago.
Yeah.
This new one does. It is designed to look like a dog. It has smooth sides. It's white in color.
But it's got
a dog face. It's got like little things that it hears. So it is very much, when you first look at it, you go, ooh, this is a robot dog.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Boston Dynamics is a robot that moves like a dog, and you can kind of see that it's a dog, but it doesn't look in any which way. Like, it is exposed wires and motors and all that type of stuff.
Yeah,
so
and
in
the,
your mind,
you know, the one now, it's got like a dog face. It's got little printed paws.
And if you've seen the Terminator movies, the Sony dog is like Arnold Schwarzenegger. The other Boston Dynamics dog is like the Terminator's trying to kill him. There you go. You see? One robot looks like Arnold. The other robots look like robots. Sony dog looks like a dog.
I mean, the later Terminators, it's like the jail robot who kept changing shapes with the liquid metal stuff.
Yeah, but he's got like the red eye and the metal head and everything.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is.
Yeah, I'm getting confused.
Terminators all backwards.
You know, there is a Terminator movie that James Cameron's getting involved in another reboot. But anyway, that's another show.
Is that like the Pet Predator one they're coming out with? So the going for $2,900. So $2,900. See, so now they right out of the gate, they say, hey, this is not a product I want to push and drive hard for revenue. It's more about innovation, best they offer. Now, the thing's pretty impressive. Like, physically, it's got sensors on it, so it knows when you're petting it. It's got a camera in its nose. Apparently, you can just call it over to you and it take pictures. Apparently, it's going to recognize the faces of people who play with it more and be more interested in them. Like, so if your kid was really into it and petting it all the time, it's going to come to that kid more often. It's got this sort of, I don't know if we call that artificial intelligence, but some sort of conditioning to it.
You can teach it tricks. It can imitate gestures and reproduce them later on command. It can take pictures with a voice prompt. It will respond to your voice. I mean, but it does. It looks like a robot trying to be a dog.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could see this product at some point becoming a thing for people.
You can teach it to pick things up.
Yeah, it's at least reactive enough. I assume it can develop like different personalities and the like. And everybody likes this kind of thing a little bit.
I'm going to make a statement in terms of what it can do, and I'm going to say this now before we segue on to the other.
Or maybe
sort
we
of robotic
talk about it
pets.
There.
Maybe. Okay, let's do
right,
that.
So let's talk about Sony. The fact that it's a Sony product.
Sure.
Right? So the article, and again, almost all these articles came from the Post because that's, of course, what I read on August 23 by. Doesn't have a byline.
Yeah, it does. Haley Tsukuyama.
Okay. A lot of the article is about the fact that Sony is not what it used to be.
No.
Or at least not in terms of presence. I'm sure it'll make money and all. But the, you know, once upon a time, Sony was the Walkman, you know, the Discman.
It was the big ball on the block.
TVs, you know, they were the big time TV manufacturer.
Block,
get your Sony Trinitron TV. But it's certainly fallen off the pace. And they're basically saying, gosh, they really missed the boat. I mean, especially since Sony is connected to record labels and
other types
of movies.
I think since it became
movies,
Sony Columbia, it sort of diversified itself into
but,
a hole.
But if they, nah, but if that's what they are, like, they've already got rights for a bunch of music, why weren't they competitive with the Apple iPod, right?
Right.
Why, well, you know, or the, you know, the iTunes, I guess would be the right thing, not iPod so much. But you would think that these are stuff that they would be heavily involved in, but they aren't. I mean, and we you know, people have some Sony stuff, but can you think of anything you've bought from Sony in the past bunch of years?
Well, to be fair, I always buy Sony TVs. And to your point, I buy Sony TVs because in my mind it's too much. You know, the difference between you and I is you'll research everything to death. Me, I can't be bothered. I'm like, let me get the Sony, they're good.
Caught up in 1988. So
yeah, exactly.
Like
I mean,
that.
To be entirely fair, I still am. And so I still have this sort of, yeah, Sony, that's the best one. Let me just buy it. Because I'm like, these 15 other brands, I don't have time. That one, I can't even pronounce that. I ain't buying that TV type thing. So that is the last thing I've bought by
Sony. Your TVs are Sony?
Yeah, they all are. Again, because I wander in and go, just give me the Sony.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm like one of those people, Ford or Chevy.
You're
you know
like
I mean?
Old people buying Cadillacs,
yes.
But now they're revitalized. Or buying Lincolns, right?
Yes,
like, so they just keep buying a Lincoln because
that's
what they, or
it's
an
true.
Oldsmobile, you know?
It's actually very true, yeah.
So this is the problem they have, really, right? You know, because probably in a younger consumer's mind, the Sony is not a cool brand, you know.
Well, you also mentioned
they made phones for a while, but they don't do anything in the phones.
Well, you also mentioned, I mean, you mentioned Apple and everything. I also think with Sony, they do computers now,
yeah.
But if I remember correctly, they were quite late because they were so successful.
Yeah.
Some of the other Japanese companies like Hitachi and Toshiba, that were always sort of the second, the third, and the fourth brands, they got into computers a lot more before Sony.
Yeah.
And so I think in terms of this now whole area of automation, obviously with the base of automation being the computer, Sony they got themselves behind the curve, and so now they are catching up.
Yeah. So part of the reason they're putting this dog out, and this guy says, listen, I'm not expecting to make a fortune off this dog at $2,900, but
why they're behind the curve.
It's to move themselves further into mind, you know, to give the impression that, hey, we're a up-and-coming tech company and consider us, and so the next time they roll something out that maybe is more consumer accessible,
I don't think it works for this purpose. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm now going to make the point that you'd wanted me to sort of wait until we talked about the other products. I'm going to make about the other manufacturers that we're going to get to. To me, the issue, when I watched the video about the Sony robot dog, looks like a dog. You know, they made a big hoo-ha, the reporter, about how it can mimic a dog, picking up a bone, sits when you pat it on its head. That's all it does. It's a plastic dog.
Yeah.
It's almost like a toy. And so I'm sitting here going, when I watched it, I'm thinking, yeah, that's really great. I'm sure it's really clever. But at the end of the day, it's a toy.
Yeah. Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Toy
it's
is
a
maybe
toy.
The wrong word. I mean, what's your dog?
Well, it's a pet. But why would I want to? But here's my point. This is an electronic pet, and I'm not criticizing it for what it is. But what I'm saying is, what it is actually quite limited. In the video that we saw in the readings we've done, the Sony dog Aibo doesn't do anything much more than mimic your dog.
Right.
So, and so at that moment, I mean, again, I've got a dog. I don't expect it to do the washing up.
Well, why not? I mean, like you know, when you're going to get a dog, you're like, what is this thing? It's just an animal that's going to walk around and I'm going to have to take it out.
I don't want to eat off a plate that the dog is licked clean. But my point is Sony's robot dog.
It doesn't answer questions? I mean, what's the point of this dog?
But what's the point of the Sony robot dog? Doesn't do anything.
It's a dog that you don't have to walk.
But here's my point. So
it's a dog you can have in an apartment.
Okay, so let me now make maybe an unfair comparison. The Boston Dynamics dog is a working robot that does stuff.
Yeah, well, there's working dogs and there's pets.
$2,900 for a...
Well, the point is, that's not... not
this
not,
is why
the price,
Sony are in
the
trouble.
Price right now is not the important part. The important part is, like, here, listen, I guarantee that there will be a segment of electronic pets going forward that don't do anything other than be pets.
Sure.
So that's what they're...
What was that other one? It was like a little, like a rodent. Furby?
Yeah, I had a Furby.
So did that... Was that electronic? Well, I don't remember.
Yeah, no, it was. It had like a little infrared sensor in front, so it would know when you were in front of it and you picked it up and you moved it around.
I'm not a comfort blanket type of guy.
And it would make different noises. And,
but that's what I'm saying. The Sony dog is nothing more than a more technologically advanced version of the Furby.
Yeah, when the Furby sold...
How much was the Furby?
The Furby sold like hotcakes.
And how much was that?
I don't remember.
Well, it sold like hotcakes probably because it was more affordable.
Yeah.
Again, we're looking
but that's the point is this dog will ultimately become more affordable, or versions of this will become more affordable.
I don't know. I don't see it being an improvement other than I don't have to walk it. I don't see how it's an... I understand, but don't get caught up in the one that this one is. Okay, all right.
The point is this is like this could be.
I am getting caught up.
I mean, I'm not, you know, listen, they've done it, been doing it for 18 years and hasn't caught on. So I don't know that this Sony is going to have the entree, but there is a segment here that they're trying to hit that's, you know, look at what people pay for a drone and it just goes up in the air, you know, takes pictures.
Yeah, but that's providing a service that you don't already have. The Sony robot dog is basically mimicking a dog.
Yeah, but not everybody can have a dog. I can't have a dog.
But right there, that's a much smaller market. I don't know. I see it.
Dog market?
What I'm saying is, and again, I watched the film. Clearly, this thing is technologically advanced. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make any criticism of that. But it feels like, unless in their minds, this is a precursor to something else, which it probably is. Right now, I can understand why their program's a bit all over the place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say that Sony is like this.
Let's talk about the other company. That's right. I think we're now going to compare companies, and I think you'll see where I am here. So there's a toy maker called Anki, A-N-K-I, and they want its robot assistant to be a pet for adults. So Anki is a robotics company, and it made its mark in the toy world with a set of basically smart racing cars.
It's basically only been a toy company so far, but I think this is the beginning of breaking out of that.
They introduced a toy robot called Cosmo, which according to the company is the best-selling toy on Amazon in the US, UK, and France. And in August, they launched on Kickstarter a new product called Vector. And according to them, it offers their first hint of broader consumer robotics ambitions. Now,
you're literally reading the article.
Yes, I am, because I'm trying to set it up for the listener. So I went to their website, and you're going to talk more about...
Is this the same woman, Haley Tsukuyama?
Yeah, this is her job, is to write about this tech stuff. I went to the Anki website, and they've made... And again, we'll stick the link up on the blog so you can actually look at these products. Looks like a little Tonka toy in that it's got wheels and a little half track, but it's also got like sort of a head.
Like a base kind of thing.
Yeah.
It pivots in it.
And it moves around. It's not very big.
It doesn't have legs. It's just a little tractor.
It's about 6 inches long.
It basically looks like it would sit in the palm of your hand.
Right.
Not like in just the palm part, but in the fingers part too, you know, like you can hold it in your hand without it like being a problem to handle, but it's not like tiny, tiny.
The first thing I noticed...
this weird little plow thing in front that lifts up and down. I'm not sure that you can tell from the videos.
But before we talk further about it, the very first thing, because I think this is important to throw out there now, the very first thing I noticed when I went to their website was these little robots were only, they're all less than $500.
Well, this thing is only...
Not very big, but it's less than $500. Yeah. So right now, and I know this is unfair, but because we're going back to back, it is fair to make a comparison. You've got Sony's robot dog that's currently, you know, nearly $3,000. Then you've got this other robotic companion. No, mm-hmm. It doesn't look like a dog. No. But it does look like a... No, let me... It does exhibit characteristics that you would want out of a pet companion in terms of how you interact with it. Like, you don't just say go and it goes bleep bleep and Rhonda's off. You know, it's got an expressive little screen and it purrs and you can talk to it, and if you pat it on the head it will have a reaction. So you do interact with it in a way similar to a pet. But right at the off, this thing is a very affordable
Pixar is an inspiration. Like if it looks like anything, it looks a bit like
Wall-E
type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all beaten up like that, but similar, somewhere between Wall-E and what was his girlfriend?
Uva.
Like somewhere between the two. It doesn't float around, but it's you know, it gets around on wheels, but it's got like a
It has a couple of eyes, it has a screen on its face,
and the eyes, they kind of roll this way, they roll that way. I think they're just monochrome or something. No, maybe it's color. I think it's color. But it's got like lasers down low, it's got multiple cameras, it can put itself in its little charger periodically, and it doesn't really talk in and of itself, although we'll talk about what it does recite, but it does a lot of chirping and whizzing like a R2-D2 type of thing.
But you can make it do things. Like, I think, is it the one where it's got a radio in it and you can tell it to play music and stuff like that?
Well, so the big thing is it's...
Oh, you can get
the other element of it is that it's like an Alexa or a Google Home.
Which we have got
on this show. It's starting to be. Like, so you can ask it questions. What's the distance between here and there? And it will tell you an answer. Please set a timer, and it runs a little timer, and it does it with personality where it's like, ooh, 10 seconds left, it's counting down, you know, everything's sort of exciting. It but it isn't, it doesn't have that full thing. I suspect we'll see a convergence of these things.
Right.
That, like, you'll actually see Google Home in one of these products. Google and Alexa have been willing to put their software into other devices. Like, you can get Sonos speakers that have Google Assistant in it and things like that. Because it's just you put it on a phone. Like, even an Android phone doesn't have to be a Google phone in order for you to have the Google artificial intelligence interface kind of thing. So you can see these things coming together. So this is where they're... It's a different target, right? Like, that's why I think it's different than what Sony's doing. It seems to me that they're ahead of the game because, like, Sony's trying hard. Like, the dog has got, like, 18 million articulable things, like the paw twist this way. Right. This thing just has wheels and a face. A lot simpler to build that, you know. But this element of it being able to answer questions, you know, I gave you a hard time before about the dog only being the dog. Well, if you can have something that's pet-like enough and does this extra piece, you probably don't turn that down. If the Sony dog... But then again, is it that hard to install Google Home into the Sony dog? Probably not. It's just a chip, right? You know, so why not? You know, the first step might be the dog that doesn't do anything. The next step might be the dog that tells you how to cook, Eggs Benedict.
Well, so I think the interesting thing here with all these products is that obviously... And again, you've got Alexa, which we did... I think it was last year we did a Alexa versus Google comparison here on the show.
Live, had him on as guest.
So right there, you are as a person, you are interacting with a voice.
Right.
These other products now are going, okay, you can also interact in a different way. And I think what they're
they actively seek out engagement, right? So it's not simply, they don't just
really
sit in a corner.
Point. Yeah.
Like, so the big thing with this little robot, there's a video which I'm sure we'll link on there that basically says, if you just sit there on a table, every time somebody makes a noise, it will reorient itself to look at that stuff and be like, oh, what's going on over there?
Right.
Like, if you have a TV on a part, like they were saying in their interviewing with the people who developed it, and they were saying, you know, we didn't plan for it to watch TV, but if you turn a TV on because it's making noise and there's visual things going on, it will look at the TV and, like, hey, what's going on this TV?
Yeah.
It's not really understanding something at
the TV.
No,
but it's given off this notion of it's alive, it's interacting with things in the way that you are.
Right.
I have this thing, when I sit on the John with the newspaper, my dog will come and just stand and look at me. So I'm guessing
closing the door.
Yes, I'm guessing that the Anki robot assistant, Vector and Cosmo, would probably do the same thing.
Maybe if they had little smell sensors in there.
They'd come wheeling in and go, what are you doing in there, bro?
Back out, like, you know, like... Well, so, and these, even at this lower price point, they're basically saying this is an entree. Like, they're going to roll out things after this that are going to be more sophisticated. So this is a case of a toy company. Toy company. I mean, look, listen, there's a part of me that's sort of tempted to be, my early gadget adoption. You know, if it was $100 less, I might be like, that'd be fun to have. $100 less.
Well, let me say this, because I tend to be more cynical about these things than you are. You've just said you're an early adopter, you like with this stuff. But I'm sitting there looking at that price point. And if you said to me you want to go halves and fiddle around with one of these for a couple of weeks,
yeah.
Because of I watched the film and I thought, wow, that's really, really clever. It's small. So at a certain moment, I'm not if you're buying an electric, you know, if you go out and buy a Wii system or a PlayStation, you're dropping $120, $130. If you go out and buy a drone, even the cheapest drone is a couple of $100.
Yeah.
So these things weighing in at anything from $200 to $400, we're all talking the same price range here. Yeah. You know, this is, again, I mean, according to the article, it's the best-selling toy on Amazon. So I'm saying, I mean, again, it's one of those things, if you had a little nephew, yeah, let me buy him one of these for Christmas. What I'm saying is that price point... Like, it's a very everyday, affordable...
It's low enough for an early adopter to go for
exactly.
It. You know?
How much...
So the one thing is they keep showing the videos of it on a table, but, like, really, you'd want it on the floor and following you around or something. Like, you don't want it on...
Does it go upstairs?
I don't think so.
Probably
that's what I say. It definitely has some physical limitations being that small, but you can easily see that technology being adopted.
You adopt that
technology into something with legs. You know, like, again, you hybridize these things and now it's walking up the stairs. You know?
I like the fact that if it gets out of control, I can run away from it.
Well,
because we're going to get
things with wheels can go. Have you ever seen those updated remote control cars that go like 50 miles an hour?
Yeah,
you know, they
true,
could just
yeah.
throw that on there. So it's pretty interesting. And the company, like you said, it appears to be an American company. The guy who owns it or runs it, his name's Boris Sofman, but we saw him and he's originally I thought maybe he's an actual Russian person, but if he's must be Russian by ethnicity, he didn't have any accent or anything. It's, of course, not that, you know, people couldn't put it over on you. But here's one of the creepy things, and then we're going to talk about another creepy thing. Because, you know, some folks, including people and members of the household here, are a little creeped out by Google Home and Alexa, them listening all the time.
How much?
Because they're listening Google, for wake words.
I'm sorry, before you finish your talk.
A Google Home is under $100 okay. for the basic right. one. And actually, the Pod ones, I think, are only $30 or $40.
Okay.
And then the Alexa's, like, depends upon what kind of speaker system you get it with. But this thing, because it has cameras, laser scanners, it's mapping out the, it's gathering much more information about your home. Now, what it does with that information, yeah. we haven't gotten as far as what it is, but it's connected to the internet, right? Yeah. And so whether it's gathering that information for usage by its company, or whether it's hackable, so that somebody could be like, do these things, I mean, it's not going to come kill you, and does it really matter if some burglar knows that your floor plan is? I don't really think, you know, unless you're running, you keep jewels in your home, I don't think it really matters that much. Yeah, somebody's breaking, they're breaking in, they're now like, oh, well, at least we know the air ducts are over here, and I can do this stuff, but it's definitely gathering more information, right? And it's not just, it's not waiting for a wake word. You know, like the Google Home and Alexa that they say is always shared to the internet is when you hit the wake word, you say, okay, Google, or hey, Alexa, or whatever the heck the right things are.
Yeah, but we
it then sends something to the internet to gather the information. This is actively engaged. Now, it may be only locally active, like in terms of it's talking to you, like just chirping at you. That there may be no interaction at all. But when you ask it a question, there's got to be an internet. It's not like it's got to be online. You know, so it's got to go onto the Wi-Fi and connect all those things. So where's that going to go? That's another part we have to watch.
Yeah, I, to be fair now, I just spent a couple of minutes there, sort of almost hyping up a little bit how, I'd take a flyer on that. Because when I did watch
it, we shared one. See, the benefit, like, what I always like when
we shared one, it could stay at your house, though.
No.
But I don't want it at my house.
Whenever
my secrets out into the world.
Well, the point
is, I don't want to come to work and find someone's put a picture of me sitting on the john as their screensaver. I don't want that. That's the bottom line.
My point is, the funny thing is, if you use these things not as they're intended, like you share it, now the data's all jumbled. Right, like you're destroying the data usefulness. Like, so we have if you have like an account that you share with somebody, now whatever algorithms are supposedly developing a profile about you,
yeah,
it's really, it gets confused, it's mixing things. It's now no longer really developing a profile about you, because this data is sort of tarnished. And so maybe the fact that you shared this and you had it going back and forth, now whatever data it has is not really useful, because the hacker is going to think, the robber is going to think that you have a 3-story townhouse, and they're going to hear and realize, oh my goodness, it's from the wrong building.
That's what I'm saying. We got to stay ahead of these robots somehow.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the last robot, are we ready to move on to the last robot?
No, we have to talk about the kids. Oh, is this what you're talking about? What's the last robot article?
Oh, sorry, we have two more. Let's go, kids.
Yeah, what was the last thing you're thinking about?
Which is the same article when we were talking about trust in robots.
Oh, yeah, okay, they're two related things.
Can I say this week, for those of you who might not know, I noticed on the net this week that apparently William Shatner, Captain Kirk, he, at some, Comic Con or something, went off for a few minutes to say how artificial intelligence was the greatest threat to man.
Yeah,
so if Captain Kirk, and he would know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they had a lot of problems.
He's seen it.
A lot of problems.
Yet another article from August.
Kirk and the Enterprise.
August 15th. This one's by Carolyn Johnson, not the same person. In the Washington Post, speaking of science, children can be swayed by robot peer pressure, study says. And it starts by children, but we're going to get to something else in there. Basically, they're saying, okay, with all this robotics we have, whether it's a movable robot or whatever it is, if it has a personality,
yes,
kids tend to believe in it, right?
And that is the one thing that both the products we've spoken about, that was their big selling
point. Oh, yeah, like, listen, this is friendly. Look,
it's not just about what they can do. They both hype up how it acts. And that was the interesting thing about both of them.
Yeah, so they've run some studies, like, for example, it's called automation bias, where people tend to believe that a machine knows or is smarter than it necessarily is, like, I tend to think of it that the machine works, that it does what it's designed to do. So apparently they did this study where they would have kids 7 to 9 years old, and they were doing a little test where they were just having to compare the size of two lines. I mean, I don't see what it looks like. I guess it got to be close enough to make some debate as to whether the lines are the same length. Kids doing the study by themselves would score a certain level right.
Okay.
if you had, they had apparently three automated robot type things that would give bad answers, and it materially decreased their accuracy because the kids would believe what the robot was saying, even though they didn't know whether the robot was smart or lying or anything like that. And there's, it's the notion that we all tend to trust the mechanical things around us.
Right.
They're trying to make the robots, but I think it's just anything, you know, like, you know, if you've, you just tend to trust what's going on around you.
I'm
going to
use that great phrase of yours that this is a distinction without a difference. I'm not one of those people who believes that the robot or whatever it is right. I tend to approach it with the fact, like, how could it be wrong? Which I know is slightly different.
Right, well, let's come to adults in a second, but just finish out a thought of kids. The other thing I thought of is, right, of course kids are going to imbue these things with life. Like, just think about a kid who freaks out when they lost their stuffed animal.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that stuff. The kid knows this stuffed animal is not real, and yet he's imbued, or she has imbued, this stuffed animal with a personality, a relationship. And so if you now suddenly have your stuffed animals are talking to you and interacting with you, you can only imagine how they're going to get to, like, total, like, attachment. So it is something we have to all be aware of as we develop these wonderful cute robots. And it doesn't matter whether it's a stuffed animal, if it's a little thing that we're talking about that doesn't look like any sort of animal at all but has expressive eyes, people are going to get attached.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, when they make these robots, they are playing on that notion that we do tend to project. It does work both ways.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, I mean, did you ever talk to your car?
I don't think so. I might have.
I talk to my car. Like, I refer to it as your, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, so what I'm saying, well, a bit strange. Like, we do project personalities and not just personality, but then a personality value onto a lot of items in general.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, yes, both Sony and Anki, and to a slightly less level, Boston Dynamics, all know that the more lifelike, in a very general phrase, they make something, it becomes a lot easier to project onto it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the funny thing in this article is it starts off with the kids, and then it says, oh, in a hopeful sign, adults were able to resist the social pressure in the same sort of experiment. So at least adults, when confronted with measuring lines and the computer told them something, or the robots told them something else, they didn't believe it.
Right.
But then it continues to go on to say, well, but adults can be subject to robot groupthink also.
Yes.
Apparently they ran an experiment where the robot, some sort of somewhat sentient-looking, tallish robot, would lead people to an emergency exit. And I assume they didn't actually actively light fires. So that, well, I mean, there's something to be said for that, because here's what happens is they would have the robots take people the wrong way and acknowledge that they were wrong, like spin around in circles and go, oh no, we gotta go back the other way. And people would just follow the robot everywhere. Like, they never were like apparently in one experiment, I think there was an exit sign pointing another direction.
Yeah.
But the robot was leading everybody some direction. And this says the people universally follow the robot.
That's interesting.
You know, that they all just follow the robot because, but this gets to your point about, like, trusting things. And I thought, okay, on its face, this seems like crazy. But by the same token, if there's a sign on the wall that says the exit's this way and there's a fire, you tend to think that sign is right.
That's
like,
correct.
And so you're going to follow it down, even if that room down there is dark. And boy, it seems weird there'd be an exit there. But
that's nobody, the sign. Nobody this would is put the way the exit, there if it man. Wasn't.
Yeah. So I'm going to actually follow the sign. And I also think, you know, because presumably they didn't have an actual fire in the building, people are going to be like, all right, fine, follow the robot, whatever. They would also follow a person. Like, if a person came into the room and said, the exit's this way, everybody would follow that person. There's no reason to know that person is right, but you tend to think when somebody says the exit's that way that they have some real risk. We have to make certain assumptions to deal with life.
To
we
an
can't,
extent,
like,
yeah.
second guess every single thing that's presented in front of us.
Have you ever seen The Poseidon Adventure?
I have.
About
been a long
the boat
time,
that flips over with Gene Hackman as the vicar and
they
then
do,
all the others.
Not a remake exactly.
But, Russell,
they did,
but that was BS.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember in the original, when they've been flipped over and there's the group of them that you are going to follow for the movie.
Yeah.
The little kid is insisting that they can go a certain way to the engine room and get out.
Yeah.
And Gene Hackman, because he's a man of the cloth, is like, let's give the kid a chance. But Ernest Borgnine, his immediate reaction is, why are we listening to some kid?
Yeah.
Now, I'm now going to be, so here you go. There's a question of
a spoiler coming up here.
No.
Well, you're going to tell if us you whether the kid was right or not, aren't you?
But a kid was. What a spoiler. The kid was right.
Yeah.
And so, there, by extension, Gene Hackman
is right.
I'm not
worried about spoiling.
Yeah. But if the kid had been a robot, I'd imagine the Ernest Borgnine would have been, yeah, okay, if the robot says, let's do it. Right. Do you see what I'm saying?
Assuming the robot so appears to be from the Poseidon Adventure company, you know?
That'd be a heck of a good movie. Adding in the reboot, you can add robots to a flipped over ocean liner. But it is interesting, to your point there, I'm wondering if you had an experiment. So you've put you and I in a Poseidon Adventure type scenario.
Mm-hmm.
The little kid says one thing, but the little Sony robot dog is doing the other.
Yeah.
What would we do?
Again, someone has to do
a conundrum for you.
Is it the Sony robot that like somebody happened to bring on board, or is it the Sony robot
that works for the boat?
The boat company.
I'm trusting the one that works. Sure, if it's got a little jacket on it, it says
the same as like if I had a map. If I had a map in my hand that said, right, this is the way the exit is, I wouldn't trust it if the kid told me, no, that's not the way the exit is.
I mean, I'm gonna say I'm trying to think of, in all seriousness, I'm trying to put myself in this position where I'm in one of these experiments, and you and I are wandering around with a group of people and we're following the robot.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone else, I'm going to give it the one go, right?
Right.
Then he goes the wrong way.
Once he's wrong.
When we're following him again, I may say to you, this robot doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But the odds of me then being big enough to go, forget this, I'm off on my own.
Yeah.
I'm probably still going to give the robot a second or a third go before I really am
probably
like,
also
this robot
because,
doesn't know what
probably
he's
also
doing.
Because the other people are following the robot, right? Like,
yeah,
10 people are following the robot.
Yes.
You're going to, it's not so much you're following the robot. You're like, well, everyone else is
doing it.
So, like, you know, my brain may be a little off here, you know?
And to be fair, if it was only you and I and the robot and not a whole lot of other people, once we've gone the wrong way and we're following him again, instead of talking to you, I might say to the robot, do you know where you're going, man? I mean, like, I would definitely give it the odds of interacting with it before just bailing on it. I wouldn't just go forget it and leave. I'd be like, look, excuse me, Mr. Robot, do you really know where you're going here? You're right. There is this sort of general... But I think as people, we are conditioned... I mean, to your point there about we all follow exit signs blindly.
Yeah.
We just do it.
Yeah.
That's where we're going.
Yeah.
We are conditioned that way.
I mean, sometimes it makes sense, but like other times, not intuitive. You know, I used to work in a building that had a funny way out of the building, not the main entrance, but a separate thing. And I remember the first time going down there, it was like, this hall is twisting like 12 different ways. I don't know where it's going. I mean, like...
And it is interesting, too. If we were following a person... See, I think the experiment would be, okay, let's get a group of people and have them follow the robot and see how long it takes for them and with the robot doing real things. I don't know the answer here, but I think it would be interesting to test at what moment do people bail out on the robot.
Right.
And then compare it with... And I was thinking about like on an airplane and then, you know, a cabin crew or something, you know, how long would a human be able to lead people down the wrong way?
Yeah.
And how quicker would I have a funny feeling we would be quicker to bail out on the person.
Yeah, probably.
Again,
well, because you can interact with the person and say like and get a read on their face.
Yeah, I'd be like, Eric, this dude really doesn't know what
he's
doing.
Whereas the robot's designed to look confident or whatever, you know, right. Like it, I don't know if design look, but it's not going to have a expression of worry on its face.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too. Yeah.
So
there you go.
Yeah.
So that's it for robots and our automation.
I think
episode?
So for today. Yeah,
we went deep in there though.
Yeah.
Then maybe I don't know. Again, I know I've said this a couple of times now. For a couple of $100s. I will be curious. I'd like to follow back on this in about 6 months to see if we can get some sales figures for this Anki, their little robot assistant pet Vector, and then their other one, Cosmo.
Cosmo's like a toy one. Like, so Cosmo looks the same, but it doesn't have any of the super interactive stuff, I guess. I don't really...
$300.
It's almost like I think it works on a remote control or something.
$300. Again, I mean, at that moment, I know because I'm a bit of a minge bag. The most amazing thing to me is how affordable any of this stuff is.
Do you have a big birthday coming up or anything?
No.
Hmm.
Yeah. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com, and now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.